Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq Market Site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A triple record day. The Nasdaq, Dow, and S&P all climbing to all-time highs as the Fed signals three rate cuts are still in the plan this year. So is this the green light investors have been waiting for? Or are there more risks just around the corner? Plus, ready for Reddit. We're counting down to the first trades of the biggest IPO so far this year. Will the platform's biggest users help the shares soar, or will they be a bigger burden than boost? Longtime venture investor Rick Heitzman will join us with some answers. And Paramount peaks on reports of a lofty takeover bid. The CBO weighs in on the cost of weight loss drugs in a burrito blowout at Chipotle. Oh. As shares hit a whopping $3,000 on news of its split. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Dan Nathan, Guy Adami, and Michael Kontopoulos, Director of Fixed Income at Richard Bernstein Advisors.
Who's that?
Something broke.
You hear that? You heard that, right?
Something broke.
Yeah. What was that?
That was the sound of records shattering across Wall Street.
Of course. That was
wow. That was the beginning of a Billy Joel song.
No, we did that perfectly, though. That actually really.
We didn't know.
The Nasdaq surging more than 1%. The Dow getting within 500 points of the 40,000 mark, and the S&P closing above 5,200 for the first time ever. The moves coming after the Fed's decision to leave rates unchanged and maintain its projection for three quarter-point cuts this year. The central bank, though, did caution that it needs to see more evidence that inflation is easing before it makes a move. Shorter-term yields did pull back on the news, but the 30-year was up. Steve Liesman is in Washington and joined us now. Steve.
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, Fed Chair Powell and the Fed's Open Market Committee stuck to a modestly dovish outlook at their rate-setting meeting today, despite 2 months of disappointing inflation numbers. Powell saying it's still appropriate to cut rates later this year. The Fed, the committee on average, stuck to their three-cut forecast, despite those itself having higher inflation and growth forecasts. And then Fed also saying it expects to slow quantitative tightening, quote, fairly soon. Fed Chair Powell downplayed the impact of the January and February inflation numbers.
I take the two of them together, and I think they haven't really changed the overall story, which is that of inflation moving down gradually on a sometimes bumpy road toward 2%. I don't think that story has changed.
At the same time, the committee as a whole said it's still not confident enough to cut rates, and the dot plot, or the individual Fed members' rate forecast, skewed just a bit hawkish. Instead of five officials below the 4.6% median, there's now just one. Nine are now at the median, and nine are above it. So a little bit more shift to the right there. You can see Chris Neguha from Evercore ISI saying this is a Fed that wants to cut rates, not before it is responsible to do so, but as soon as it is responsible to do so. But it's a close call. The three rate cuts survived by virtue of one vote, and one cut on average was taken away from the average official forecast. Another bad inflation month, and the market might be forced to rethink its bet on a June cut with two more to follow, Melissa. So I wouldn't get too carried away on just how dovish the Fed was today.
How do you think about the idea that rates in 25 and 26 will be higher than in 24?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that?
I think he indicated that he thought it was going to be a shallower exit from their rate cuts. I mean, ultimately,
they're down in 25, 3.9 from 4.6. So they are seen coming down, just not as much as had previously been forecast. That 3.9 had been 3.6 in the prior forecast. So they did take one away. They also raised the neutral rate by 1/10, not a big deal. I am not all that concerned with what the Fed thinks is going to happen next year, because I barely think they can figure out what's going to happen this year.
Yeah, I think the markets are on the same page as you on that one, Steve.
Real quick, Steve, unexpected weakness in the labor market warrant a response. Okay, now that's the labor market in that vacuum. What do you think? What's your interpretation of what that means? 4.3% unemployment, 4.5%? Just I'm curious as to your thoughts about that, because that sort of stuck out to me.
I think you're in the neighborhood. I don't think it's going to be like an automatic, if we hit X, then we'll do Y I think it'll be the totality of what's happening in the job market, how much payrolls have sunk, how much unemployment is going up. But it is interesting, guys. I thought one takeaway from today's meeting was there isn't anything I can point to, and maybe you all around the table there can figure it out, to say to Powell, look, you're missing this clear and present danger and threat to the economy by not cutting immediately. It is not obvious to me where that weakness is. Some guy might say delinquencies. Well, guess what? That delinquency data has been stable for a while. You can say the commercial real estate or the office market. Well, guess what? Fed says they're on top of that. Every banker and their brother and their sister know that they better be on top of that right now. You can talk maybe about there's still regional bank issues out there with interest rates. Well, they've had a year and change to get their act together on that. Maybe I'm missing something, but it's unclear now and hard to say to Powell, look, you're making a big mistake by not cutting right now.
Yeah, Steve, I actually agree with you. I mean, most of those measures that you just indicated hit their lows last year and are actually getting better now. But look at five-year break-evens. I mean, I think we're at a one-year high in five-year break-evens. What do you think Powell has to, you know, what do you think Powell thinks about that?
So that's a more interesting question from a different standpoint. It was sort of the question I asked him, which is, what am I supposed to make of your commitment to fighting inflation if you're going to be keeping to those three cuts at the same time that you're raising your growth forecast and raising your inflation forecast? What it tells me is he's going to be patient with all this. He still appears to believe in the dynamic underneath the economy that has been pulling inflation down and does not believe that dynamic is especially tied to the growth dynamic. This is new, both for the Fed and really for the whole idea of most Wall Street economists who thought, hey, we've got to have weaker growth in order to bring down inflation. So I do think he missed an opportunity today to be a little hawkish and maybe get some currency out of that. But he doesn't seem like he really wants to rattle where everybody's at. I would say I would not be over my skis before we have a sense of what's happening with that March inflation number. I think you do three lousy numbers in a row, and we're going to have a different conversation come March.
Right. Steve, thank you. Steve Leisman in Washington for us. So why all the records? Record upon record upon record, and this confirms it in terms of the price action in the markets.
Well, is it about real rates? I mean, like at the end of the day, if you think about it, we're coming off this ZERP, you know, and into the, you know, this period where we are right now, where inflation now, they want it down to 2%. Prior to the pandemic, they wanted it up to 2%. We were dealing with a 0% interest rate. Now we have at the upper end of the band of Fed funds at 5.5%, and we have inflation that basically stopped going down. And I think that's the message that I take away from what the Fed had to say today, that, like, you know, and what they have been saying, but for whatever reason, stock market investors don't care because, like, they still have this growth trajectory that is well above what people had thought over the last 2 years. And think about this. In 2022, we've talked about it again and again. We had a bear market predicated on this recession that was going to happen in 2023. And now it's being pushed out to I don't even know when. So at the end of the day, you tell me, and maybe Michael, are we restrictive with a 5.5 Fed funds and inflation done going down where it is? Maybe we are. I don't know, but it's not doing a whole heck of a lot to the economy right now.
No, we're not. We're not restrictive. I mean, and to me, it's clear as day. Look at leading economic indicators. They've bottomed. Look at PMIs. They've bottomed. Look at the stock market. You're near all-time highs or at all-time highs, right? You're at Bitcoin. There's tons of liquidity in the system. We're not restrictive. You know, home prices are going back up. That's going to be a headwind to inflation later this year. And so I think this idea, just because we're at 2% real rates, that's some magical number that's restrictive. You know, that's completely debunked at this point.
Yeah. And I would argue that the most important part of today's meeting was where he threw some dovish fuel on the fire, which was talking about the balance sheet runoff. He kind of said, look, you know what, we don't have to move as fast. And by the way, some of that will take care of itself. But if every Fed meeting in the Q&A is kind of like an art show, you know, you kind of like you read every word, you parse through it, you kind of, I mean, this was, and pardon the Goldilocks expression, but I thought he Goldilocks this one in terms of an art show. In other words, he talked about his dual mandate. He talked about how, hey, we're hitting on the labor market, but actually, you know, we could actually see the labor market weaken on the headline unemployment, but the participation rate could go up and it could be a great story. And meanwhile, we're very concerned about price stability, but we're concerned about job growth. I mean, he said it all. I heard an economy and the statement upgraded the economy. We all know what the stock market's doing. We all know what the stock market's priced in. This was a dovish afternoon because, again, the balance sheet is not getting a whole lot smaller anytime soon. And as Mike pointed out, financial conditions are so loose right now. And another great reason to have Mike on the desk right now is because, like, if you look at high-yield option-adjusted spreads, we haven't been this tight since June of 2007. And we all know what happened after that. I'm not saying it's about to happen. But the credit world is telling you no one is concerned about risk. I understand capital markets aren't as open as they were and whatnot, but credit spreads, stock markets, financial conditions tell you it's risk on, and the Fed did nothing to slow that down today.
It's interesting. You know, in the fall, the market began to rally on the thoughts there'd be six rate cuts. Six.
Right.
This year.
Now we're down to half of
that. Then we took it down to three. The market sold off a little bit. He reemphasized or reiterated three, and the markets at all times. So the markets clearly just wants to rally regardless. But, you know, there are listen, you can say what you want about the guy. In terms of the stock market, he's done a masterful job without question. And quite frankly, I mean, it's hard to argue in terms of the economy. Nothing's broken yet. Unemployment's still below 4%. But there things are on the surface, in my opinion, especially in the real acceleration of inflation and the green light that'll give inflation assets to move higher today.
Well, I thought, you know, for Fed Chair Powell to sort of just be so dovish today, he really gave it away in some sense. He even addressed the fact that he thinks that he's comfortable with the idea that we've hit peak rates already. So even if things worsen and things get hot, I don't know, they sort of box themselves into a corner a little bit.
Well, I mean, we've seen the Fed, you know, change their stance meaningfully over the years, right? I mean, they weren't going to hike, and then all of a sudden, 500-plus hikes later.
But they've always left the door open. I felt like today they closed the door a little bit more.
They'll be data-dependent. Like Steve said, if you get hot inflation prints over the next couple of months, I think the Fed's tune is going to change. And when is the Fed or the market actually price things correctly? Almost never. I'll wager to say that the market will start pricing in a hike at some point within the next 12 months.
Nice.
That's my bet.
Wow.
Well, we're down to 20 bips for June. So, I mean, this was a slam dunk a little while ago. That's interesting because what you're saying about conditions and what we're saying about credit spreads tells you that, if anything, they need to reel it in more.
Yeah. You may get a cut before that hike, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting. Well, I think at one point earlier this year, there was a 7% chance of a hike at some point this year. I understand exactly what Michael's saying. And quite frankly, if that were the case, mm-hmm. you could say it's because inflation's out of the box or because the economy is doing well enough where. So, I mean, again, it's depending on how you look at it. I'm more the inflation. Listen, the last couple inflation numbers have been hot in a word. That PPI number was twice what the street was looking for. Market cared for a day. Doesn't seem to care. And you're seeing it in yields. 10-year yields really went down 3 basis points today. I mean, so I think the bond market is looking at this a little bit differently.
This all makes sense. But let's say Michael's right. 12 months is a long time for the markets to still drift higher because of this notion that the economy is still good and corporations are still making money and consumers have the ability to spend.
Right. So then you want to look for things that haven't benefited from this inflationary environment. One of them, and I know we're going to probably talk about Intel a little later, they just got $8.5 billion from the U.S. government for free and then $11 billion of low-cost loans to build out something that will be inflationary here in the U.S. If you just think about the whole nature of reshoring and what that means for wages and the like here. So, again, there's lots of ways to probably benefit from this. You know, like, things are going crazy right now in the markets. Like, a whole host of different risk assets are doing that, and there's plenty of stuff that haven't participated yet. One of those areas is the Russell 2000, which obviously outperformed, you know, the major indices too. That thing's been range bound. It's still well below those all-time highs made in 2021. You got to say to yourself, why is that not? And I get it. I know what's in there, and I know that some of the areas that have kind of underperformed, but like, that would be an area.
Well, why buy the Russell? And I hear what you're saying. I totally agree with that. But I mean, when you've got GM, you know, moving 50%, when you've got a whole bunch of industrial companies, industrials make new highs every day. All you need to know about the stock market's interpretation of the Fed was from 2 o'clock or 2:01 or 2:21, wherever you think the market really took the impact, you saw, first of all, gold rallied 120 bips from that point to the end of the day. That tells you all you need to know about how, you know, aggressive not the Fed is going to be. KRE up 3.8% from the Fed announcement to the end of the close. KRE, regional banks, you know, it tells you what you want. Bitcoin was up 4.8%. And then as you got into high multiple tech land like DraftKings, tells you a lot about consumer spending. Spending was up 4.5%, 5%.
But this is all early cycle stuff, which makes sense, right? Whether it's regional banks, whether it's industrials, whether it's small caps, the junkiest stuff rallying is because economic growth is strong and earnings growth is accelerating in those areas as well. Look at the home builders as an example.
Right. Speaking of home builders, we got an earnings alert on KB Home. The home builder is slightly higher in extended trading after reporting a beat in the top and the bottom lines. The company
News Call kicking off at the top of the hour. CNBC's Diana Olick has got the details. Diana.
Well, Melissa, KB reported a strong beat with revenues up 6% and net new orders up 55%. CEO Jeff Metzger said fiscal 2024 is off to a strong start, noting Q1 results were either at or above guidance, and they did raise guidance slightly as well. He added that market conditions have improved since the end of our 2023 fiscal year. This positive momentum in demand has continued in our 2024 second quarter to date. Not surprising, given we've seen builder sentiment rise into positive territory this month. And we also saw February single family housing starts surge much higher than expected. Now, KB's average selling price did drop to $480,100 from $494,500 the year before. Builders are also offering incentives, especially buying down the mortgage rates. But KB's gross profit margin came in at 21.5%, which was the same as a year ago. Backlog did drop pretty sharply, likely due to the big rise in interest rates last fall. Melissa?
Diana, thank you. Diana Olick. And speaking of big moves, home builders, new highs in today's session.
You know, amazing. Absolutely. Again, if things are as good as it appears, I mean, these things are just going to continue to sort of levitate. My one concern for home builders, I've said it before, it has not been justified. If the unemployment rate starts moving in a meaningful way, that's when I think you put the stop sign up for these. But again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. The high end home builders, their prices are going higher, their average selling price. The mid to lower end, the prices are going lower. And it's the same thing we saw. We talked about this with some of these retailers. Yep. It's the same sort of barbell thing. We're seeing the high end consumer on one side in Williams-Sonoma and the flip side with like a Dollar Tree.
Can you imagine if rates go down, what's going to happen to home prices and the builders?
Oh,
it's going to be a frenzy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, this is just, you know, typical behavior when you're early in mid-cycle. The home builders do very, very well, regardless of rates. The small caps are the same sort of way. So, I mean, listen, this is all telling the same story. And by the way, it all feeds into inflation as well. You know, the big expectation was that inflation was going to come down because of rents coming down. Well, if home prices go up, rents go up as well.
I think you're right, Michael, or at least it's interesting. And I think at the table, you've got the most credence in bringing this up to the table. I mean, calling this early cycle is crazy to me.
Yeah.
I mean, think about where we've come from. So what happened at the end of the cycle? In other words, we never. So it's really extraordinary to think about, you know, essentially the war economy we had with no war. And I realize COVID was hardship, but we pumped up the economy. We pumped up the balance sheet. We pumped up a whole lot. And we were already late cycle at that point, and now we kind of missed the whole thing. So
well, remember, we were in an earnings recession in 2022, and small caps earnings just bottomed in Q4.
All right, we've got a news alert on Reddit's IPO pricing. We've got it now, I understand. Leslie Picker's got the details. Leslie.
Hi, Melissa. Yes, speaking with sources familiar with the matter, Reddit has decided that IPO price for its debut, high end of the range here, $34 per share, same number of shares offered, about 22 million there. That implies an offering size of 748 million. 70% of that is going to be sold by the company or primary. The rest is going to be sold by selling shareholders. Those are largely employees and so forth. That also implies a fully diluted valuation of about $6.4 billion on a fully diluted basis. So you can see there, Reddit pricing its IPO high end of the range, $34 per share. That one's set to debut tomorrow morning. Melissa.
All right. Leslie, thank you. We'll have much more on Reddit's IPO with Rick Heitzman later on this hour. Meantime, coming up, more after-hours action in the chip space. Micron jumping after reporting results and details out of the quarter next. And sticking with the semi space, Intel landing billions from the CHIPS Act, how they're planning to use the money, and what the CEO had to say about the company's next steps. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money, be right back.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee. Right here on CNBC.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Micron. Shares are popping after posting a beat on revenues and a surprise profit for the quarter. Christina Partsenevelis has got all the details. Christina.
Well, a return to profitability after five quarters of losses. And use the word surprise. I use the word surprise because the results were higher than every analyst estimate on Wall Street. They also provided a much stronger than expected outlook. And the stock, like you said, is climbing almost 14% right now. The CEO is on the call. He's still chatting. He's attributing the improvement to improved conditions or improved conditions to strong AI demand, healthier demand in most end markets. Remember, that was an issue. Cyclicality was a concern going into this print. But Micron pointed to improvements across the board from PCs to auto. The CEO also says AI memory, which is high bandwidth memory 3E, HBM3E, it's already sold out for 2024 and mostly allocated for 2025, according to the CEO. They count NVIDIA as one of their customers. It only took them about 8 minutes in the call to name drop NVIDIA. They did warn of supply reductions across other memory products like DRAM, so that's memory that can only be stored with power, and then NAND memory, which saves without power. Memory prices, though, are climbing so quickly that management now predicts positive cash flow in the second half of this year and record revenue for fiscal 2025. So very bullish right now.
Christina, thank you. Christina Partsenevelis. You know, a lot of analysts were very bullish going into this report, just saying that the CEO has been so optimistic when talking about demand for HBMs, the high bandwidth microchips.
Yeah, listen, this is a company in fiscal year 2023 had negative gross margins. So when you think about booms and busts, and so I think it's interesting when you talk about the demand for these HBMs, okay, so these are the things going to allow AI to operate on devices here, and they're going to be sold out, but they're also going to lower, like they said, supply, and that might be a manufacturing thing for some areas that have less demand. I mean, this is the story of Micron, but I'll say another thing. If you look at the historical chart of this thing on a log basis, we might have looked at it the other day, it just made a new all-time high. And we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks talking about some other names like Dell, you know, who have gotten back to their bubble highs from 25 years ago. This thing just broke out in a meaningful way from a technical standpoint. So when you get momentum going like this, you have a quarter like this where you're expected a loss and you go to a big profit, that sort of thing, it's probably not a one quarter event.
All right. Meantime, the White House awarding Intel $8.5 billion in CHIPS Act grants with the possibility of another $11 billion on top of that. The large sum will go toward the company's efforts to increase U.S. semiconductor manufacturing. John Fort spoke with Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger. Here's what he had to say about the company's new chip factories.
They're some of the largest construction projects ever done on Earth, building the smallest things ever been built. You know, these are truly marvels of manufacturing R&D, research and technology. And every one of those AI chips, they need this stuff going into the future. So I'd say this is part of our unique role that Intel has for the industry today and into the future.
Shares of Intel having a rough year so far as a laggard in the semi space. Could this grant be the catalyst that returns the company to maybe some of its former glory? I mean, already they had delayed one of these plants that's going to benefit from this grant in Ohio. They delayed that one, and they did cite a slowdown or because the government money was so slow in coming, but also challenging market conditions, which I don't know if, if they've gone away.
Well, and there's been some I'd say, I would maybe slightly embarrassing, but whatever you want to call, you know, Taiwan Semi finishing a plant in Japan faster than they're doing stuff over here, reallocating to other places in the world where I think it's also going to be easier to work than it is in the United States. Intel's, look, it's been a massive disappointment for the last couple of years. It gets back to where do you think, first of all, from the stock's perspective, I think it's underowned. I don't think there's any question to me for all the reasons that we've just talked about. But I look to the future and I look at the dynamics, the CapEx spend of the communication service providers, the hyperscales, you know, you can't. They are going to be double-digit CapEx growth for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, and at some point, Intel's going to grow into this. So not cheap, certainly not cheap on valuation, but I think you can wade through here. Every time they report, we've seen the cycle for the stock. It sells off 10 to 15%. It creeps back up and takes out those highs until the next earnings cycle. You trade it that way if you want.
I wonder where the semiconductor cycle will be in 27 or 28 when these plants are finally operational. I ask rhetorically.
Sort of.
But I mean, no, but you have to wonder, you know, how that's going to line up for them.
I don't think they know the answer to that question, unfortunately. Yeah. And, you know, I'll say this with respect to Intel. I mean, they got lazy many, many years ago. It was just them and AMD, and they dominated the landscape. And the only reason AMD existed is so Intel wouldn't be a monopoly. And quite frankly, the world passed them by very quickly. And you see it manifest itself every single quarter they report. The reason to own Intel, my opinion only, is if you think these other high flyers are going to come back down to earth and maybe there's a rotation, or you believe it's some sort of homeland security play that we've talked about before, which today's $8.5 billion gives you sort of credence that might be the case.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
A Paramount Premium. The studio reportedly attracting a big bid to go private. What it means for the company and the streaming space now. Plus, IPO in the know. Reddit getting ready for its first day of trading. What to know about pricing and how the stock could hold up in the public markets. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back. We've got a market flash on Apple. Kate Rooney's got the details. Kate.
Hi there, Melissa. So the Department of Justice reportedly plans to file an antitrust case against Apple as soon as Thursday. This is according to Bloomberg News. Shares of Apple are dipping on this news. A little bit of context here. The antitrust enforcers, they say, have been probing the company since 2019. They allege Apple has imposed software and hardware limitations on some of their products, iPhones and iPads, specifically to impede rivals from effectively competing. Again, this is from Bloomberg News. We reached out to Apple on this. They are declining to comment, but this news is hitting shares here after hours. Mel, back over to you.
All right, Kate, thanks. Kate Rooney, down 1.3% right now. Once upon a time, these headlines would not move the stock whatsoever, but here we are, doubt around the Apple story, period.
Here we are. I mean, the stock is, we thought it could trade down the October low, 163. It got very close. It bounced to 179-ish, so maybe it's just a little people that took advantage of this move we've seen over the last couple weeks. Maybe it's on the back of that. To your point, historically, it doesn't move the stock. I think given what we've seen with the name over the last couple months, it does.
Is there something about this headline that is scarier, in your view, Tim, than past headlines we've seen about antitrust efforts?
These aren't the headlines for me with Apple that scare me. They really are, you know, seems to be a word of the night, but the cyclicality of their business, where we are in terms of where I think, you know, that installed base really is going to benefit from some of these changes in innovation and technology. But there's no question that Europe is serious. And there are a lot more teeth on the antitrust side. It's just, to me, not the reason to sell Apple here. The reason to sell Apple is the valuation at a time when I also just think you've seen a lot of rotation out of some of that mega cap tech, and I think some of that is Apple.
Yeah, we spent some time earlier in the week talking about the rumors that maybe Apple was talking to Google or OpenAI about what they might license, you know, for their Gen AI product, how they're going to integrate that into iOS or into their actual devices. I mean, that's going to get some regulatory, you know, scrutiny. You know, so like you just put them all together and you say to yourself, these guys don't have the product that they did 10 years ago that were driving their ecosystem right now, and they're kind of left flat-footed on the Gen AI thing. So every headline like this, I think, is that much more important.
All right, Paramount shares surging after a Wall Street Journal report that private equity firm Apollo has launched an $11 billion bid for the company's film and TV studio business. That's about a 50% premium, 50, half a hundred premium to the market cap of all Paramount Paramount Global as of yesterday's close. This latest offer comes as the streaming player weighs a bid to merge entirely with Skydance Media. We were just talking about whether or not it's worth it for this asset.
It's fascinating. And, of course, what's been going on here is, you know, the Redstone family, Sherry Redstone and co. have not really, they've resisted. And the Paramount studio clearly has appeal to players in the industry, strategic partners, whether it's been Netflix or people that have been circling around, you know, the whole talk about the Skydance Media bid and, you know, merging that with Nickelodeon. What I said, you know, a month ago, and we've had other rumblings around Paramount now for a couple months and for a couple of years, is I think private equity is here. And private equity is looking at the entire media space, and they're looking at the assets here, and they are doing some of the parts. There's Warner Brothers out there. There's a lot of companies that I think are trading below their intrinsic value. Intrinsic value is certainly measured in different places, and in linear TV, we know those assets are declining in value, but at some point, I think there's still a lot of value there. So the fact that this deal was so far above the market cap of the company yesterday, which was under $8 billion, is extraordinary, except for the fact that people have wanted these assets for a long time. It's just been about getting the control and the rest of the deal together.
And maybe there's too much
liquidity out there. That's right. Yeah.
All right, coming up, big plans for Big Burrito. Chipotle's 50-for-1 stock split sending shares soaring. Why a move that should mean nothing for a stock is having such an impact? That's next. And what to know about Reddit's IPO? Venture capitalist Rick Heitzman is here to lay out what he expects out of the social media company's big debut and if this can spark an IPO resurgence. More on that when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks hitting all-time highs after the Fed reiterated guidance for 3 rate cuts this year. The Dow jumping 400 points, the S&P climbing nearly 1%, and the Nasdaq leading the gains up 1.25%. Shares of Chewy on the move after posting results, the company posting a surprise profit, but falling from its after-hours highs. And shares of Chipotle getting a burrito bump, touching the $3,000 level at one point, the move after the company's board approved a 50-for-1 stock split. Shareholders will vote on the split at Chipotle's annual meeting on June 6. We've said many times on this show that when you split a stock, it doesn't really add any value to this. It doesn't at all, in fact. But it does make it a candidate potentially to enter other indices.
Yeah, I mean, it could certainly, I mean, imagine what it might mean for the industrial average and whatnot. But as someone that has gotten the story wrong, and certainly from the investment side, I'm a consumer. I've talked about my frustrations there, but they,
in your Upper West Side lacking ingredients
happened again last week. Having said that, this stock, in terms of the growth, and they've done everything right in terms of what's been going on in kind of casual fast, not only in terms of their menu, in terms of their positioning, but what they've done on digital, what they've done on store openings, how they've done it efficiently. There's nothing you can say. They've traded at a 50-plus multiple for a long time.
Stay with the burrito, Melms.
What?
Stay with the burrito. Stay with CMG. Stay with it. Okay. Ride the horse.
I like it. Keep going.
And I understand that haul doesn't matter.
Right.
Stay with it.
All right. Meantime, more on the Reddit IPO. As we told you earlier this hour, the stock pricing $34 a share, the top end of the range, starts trading tomorrow morning. First Mark Capital managing partner Rick Heitzman is deep in the IPO market. He is known for early investments in companies including Airbnb, Pinterest, and DraftKings. Rick, always good to see you. You're not in this one.
Not in this one, but it's great to be back, and it's great that this seems to be opening the market. This plus Astera today means that we're going to start talking about IPOs again.
Yeah. You make the point, though, that this is not a premium company.
Yes.
So this is really going to be a test, right?
This is a real test. That, you know, it'll be a little bit of a litmus test for the IPO buyer sentiment because it's not a premium company. It's at the end of the social cycle. It's not premium in terms of its ARPU, its growth. It's still losing money. Yet at the same time, there's tons of demand.
Yeah, so Rick, $800 million in revenue last year, 73 million like daily active users. They lost about $90 million. So to your point, not a great company. I'm sure they're trying to get costs under control. There was an announcement a few weeks ago, I think, that they did a deal with Google, $60 million to sell access to their API. That is about AI. That's going to be like that sort of story. Are companies like this that are losing money going to have to tell a different narrative than they have been telling for the last, let's say, 15 years or so?
They will. They tried to get leaner. They tried to get more profitable. They did cut costs, but they still can't get to that profitability goal. In addition to that, they did, as part of their roadshow, sprinkle some of that AI pixie dust by saying, we're now an AI adjacent company, being able to license our data. And obviously, licensing your data is 100% margin business. Mm-hmm. So that all falls to the bottom line, and they believe they'll be able to do this multiple times. And a lot of people with great stores of data are going to continue with this business model as these LLMs grow and access to data really matters.
There's probably not a perfect comp in the publicly traded market world. However, what is this most close to in terms of what we trade?
If you look at some of the research, it's Pinterest. They're saying, hey, this is poor man's Pinterest. There's, you know, it's a community around goods and services. I think Pinterest has a lot higher intent, so therefore the average revenue per user is much higher, and you have a lot of search type revenue, whereas Reddit is a lot of, you know, random ads that people are trying to have untargeted, and they don't necessarily have the tooling to make those ads much better.
How do you think this thing trades tomorrow, considering 8% of the shares are allocated to users with no lockup period?
I think it still trades up. I think that there's going to be some effectively, you know, meme stock hodlers. If you think about the people who are going to be that 8% going to users, going to those marketing managers who are running Reddit, they're going to hold the stock. They're true believers. But I also think you're going to see a lot of people coming in. You know, Astera today trades up tremendously. Obviously, much different AI story, but still people are interested in new issues. And I think you're seeing the calendar starting to build for the second quarter.
Yeah. Do you think we start seeing those pixie dust IPO companies, the AI companies, rushing to market, or even some of the GLP? I mean, I'm just trying to think of the pockets in the market that are in most demand right now.
Those are the two. Yeah. Those are the two. So you're seeing some companies that were good companies that were waiting to access the market, especially on the consumer side. Harrys.com, StubHub, SeatGeek. I think you're going to see at least two of those three in the second quarter or before the market shuts for the election. And then you'll see if some of the AIs get pushed out. But the companies that might trade at valuations, which will be extreme premium, would be the GLP-1 adjacent companies, mm-hmm, or AI, obviously.
Rick, great to see you. Thank you.
Great seeing you. Thank you.
First Mark Capital. Would you be a buyer of Reddit?
I'd be a buyer of Pinterest. Reddit, not necessarily, but I understand what Rick is saying in terms of that crowd. But Pinterest reported, I think, on February 12th, traded down 10%, and yet four analysts come up and raise their price targets somewhere between $42 and $48. So I think Pinterest, despite that little move lower, post-earnings is the place you want to be.
I think it's a fascinating time for the retail investor also to be, I mean, on the IPO market, those are the public markets, but you are seeing the retail investor get more involved in privates, more involved in alts. And the dynamic here is that I think the market is becoming a lot more sophisticated and deeper than the traditional market for IPOs.
Coming up, a check on China Tech. The K-Web Chinese Internet ETF seeing some strength today as a couple of names posted strong results. What is next for these stocks? Next, Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Pinduoduo shares finishing well off their highs after the Chinese tech giant reported a huge revenue beat before the bell. The stock was up as much as 16% before pairing those gains. They did, though, finish the day more than 3% higher. The K-Web China Internet ETF following a similar path today. Tencent, and Alibaba joining Pinduoduo in the green, while Baidu finished in the red. Tim, a nice revival for Chinese internet.
It's actually been an interesting 6 to 8 weeks. There's been a struggle. There's been a struggle to kind of get through some levels. We've had some nice runs. As we always say, these have been trading stocks. The macro in China, I think, is it's easy to point out the negative. It's easy to point out the property issues. The under-owned and the sentiment levels in this country for owning some of their Mag 7 is low. I've been adding K-Web to client accounts over the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And as you got into this year and you're looking for places that for people for the next 2 to 3 years, I don't think there's any question you want to be in China. We talked about the B in Bicep, which is, you know, got almost 40% of its market cap in cash, and they're buying back stock. And I think they recognize, you know, this whole spin-off thing was supposed to create value at Alibaba, and it's been slowed down a bit. But I just think some of this is clumsy. I think China looks really interesting. And the global growth thing, we're seeing Europe's outperforming the U.S. for the first time in a decade.
They are also, all of these big Chinese internet companies are also returning capital to shareholders, as you mentioned, for Baba, dividend, share buybacks, Tencent increasing its buyback program here. You've liked China.
We have.
From a long time ago.
We have. Obviously, a little bit early to the China trade. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we like China. I mean, listen, it's got all the things going for it. You've got accelerating profit growth. You have a PBOC that's pumping liquidity into the system. And listen, everybody talks about the geopolitical risks and the unemployment and the property crisis, et cetera, but that's priced at, you know, roughly 8 times. And so when I look at China, I see a lot of similarities to the U.S. in 08 and 09. So, yeah, we like China here.
Coming up, budgeting for obesity, how weight loss drug coverage could put a strain on the federal budget, and the latest headlines from one firm's first weight loss conference. All that next. More Fast Money in 2. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Novo Nordisk taking a dip midday after a report from the Congressional Budget Office suggested that Medicare coverage of blockbuster obesity drugs could put a strain on the federal budget, with the cost to cover them outweighing potential savings from a reduction in other health care expenses. The news comes as BMO holds its inaugural obesity summit today, bringing together pharma companies, PBMs, health care providers, as well as patients. Joining us on set with the key takeaways, Evan David Seigerman, Managing Director at BMO Capital Markets. Evan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Is the enthusiasm still as robust as it has been?
The energy in the room a few blocks north was incredible today. It was jam-packed. People were really excited to be here. The CBO news did not dampen the mood. A lot of questions, a lot of conversations. And I think we're really working to figure out how to get patients access to these drugs. That's the key question that we're trying to unpack here.
Where do you stand on Lilly and Novo in terms of how they're valued right now, and how we are thinking about that total addressable market that they may be addressing? I mean, once upon a time, it was, you know, how many people are, you know, struggling with obesity times by how much the drug costs, which is not the case when you consider insurance and access questions.
There's so many questions there. So it's funny because I looked at a note from mid-2022 looking when the first data was released. My peak sales are $14 billion. Clearly a lot higher now. We're at about $150 billion for the entire class. I cover Lilly, so I think that shares still have room to run. A lot of enthusiasm around the weight loss space, and I think there's still momentum. Don't cover Novo, but clearly the other key competitor in the duopoly, and we think that both can coexist for a while.
So, Evan, drop us also into, you know, the broader ecosystem and some of the medical device players. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to attack this. And at different times in this trade, we've seen the market overreact. And I won't ask you to comment on Hershey's and Coca-Cola and Fritos. But I guess I'm just trying to really put some, you know, there are companies out there that are still beaten up by the headlines. Should they be, and pick which ones you think?
Well, I think that there's a few things. One, you know, like the sleep apnea companies, ResMed, we're going to get some data from Lilly's trial coming up soon. I think sleep apnea is a complex disease, a complex condition. Clearly, obesity is a component of it. That was said at our summit today. But I don't know if that necessarily, like, tanks the sleep apnea market here. You know, other things like glucose monitoring, that all still exists. People are going to be really interested in their health and really interested in monitoring their biostatistics. So there may be a shift, but it's not going to be that seismic.
We know Lilly. We know Novo. What other companies in your universe should we be focused on that we're not?
Structure Therapeutics, oral small molecule targeting GLP-1, solves a lot of potentially the access issues. It's a lot easier to manufacture, can get appealed to a lot more folks. I'm also, you know, don't cover them, but look at companies like Altimmune, Viking, we had Terns, Scholar Rock. What's really interesting at our event, we weren't just talking about the weight loss. We're talking about the muscle loss component of the weight loss, which is huge. That is really critical because I think that's going to be the next part of the equation that we need to figure out.
And they're already, the big ones are already addressing that in terms of other combinations.
Yes.
The next generation of GLP-1, which also fights that part of it. When will we see that?
So it's still early because Lilly did an acquisition with Versanis to try to address this. Novo did an acquisition recently. Even companies like Regeneron, we think Regeneron is Eylea and Dupixent, but they have assets in development to deal with the muscle loss component of GLP-1s, and I think that's what's super interesting.
Evan, talk to us about the broader ecosystem, some of the names that we don't have the opportunity to cover. We've seen Ro.co on a telemedicine company here, like some of these ones that are distributing and treating and prescribing, that sort of thing. What are some things in the private markets that excite
you? So what's really interesting, at this event, we had a company called IntelliHealth, and what they're doing is trying to democratize access to care. One of the big issues is getting in to see an obesity medicine specialist. you can't get an appointment. It's a year-long waiting list. They're coming up with an online platform to get patients to clinicians quicker so that they can get access to that care. And it's not just getting a GLP-1. It's nutritional assistance. It's counseling on how to exercise. It's working through the side effect profile of these drugs. Because when you first start them, it's kind of nasty for some patients. So it's ensuring that these patients get care very quickly. So I'm really interested in that digital health component.
Some of the smaller names that you had mentioned are interesting, but what they lack is the capital to bring it to market. And so are there any smaller ones that are working now that have the capital, or do you see all of them as potential targets?
I think, listen, in small cap biotech, they're usually targets. Structure today, the CEO is, we're looking at partnerships now. They recognize that to get an oral small molecule targeting GLP-1 to the masses, it's going to take some heavy lifting and some capital. Right. So.
Evan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sharp-dressed man, too.
He looks great.
Thank you.
Sartorial. First guy here next to Michael Katopoulos.
Oh, stop it.
Thanks, Mel. Andrew. Appreciate that.
Another vote of confidence. All right, up next, Final Trades. Record-setting day across the board with the Dow, the Nasdaq, and the S&P 500 setting new all-time highs after the Fed chair held steady to 3 rate cuts this year, as the markets were hoping. Take a look at Micron shares. After reporting results, it is still higher. It is up 15% right now. So a big pop on that one. We'll watch the impact on the whole semiconductor index tomorrow. Final trade time. Let's go around the horn, Tim.
Great having Michael. Guy just said he thought the Knicks could be in the championship.
I did say that. Yeah.
Bold call.
Delta Airlines could be in your championship, certainly in this trading range through 45. I like it.
Michael Katopoulos.
You want to own stocks as earnings growth have bottomed, is about to accelerate. You're seeing that in the entire small cap sector, so we like small caps.
And thank you for being here on the show,
thank
Michael.
You.
Dan, Nathan?
Yeah, so those airlines breaking out, as Tim just mentioned. You know, if Boeing can rally on the news today, maybe Southwest Airlines could fill in a bit of that gap from last week also.
I did say that about the next. And
did.
Just this little inside baseball, because we have a few seconds.
Yeah.
Michael and Tim were ecstatic that the Mets won a spring training game, which tells you.
And what did you say? And what did you say to them?
They were the whole season.
I was ecstatic that Diaz came in and closed the door
with the trumpets.
Pieces. It's all part of it.
Agnico Eagle Mines, Melissa.
That's the A in clam?
Sure it is.
Thank goodness.
Gotta touch your clam. Thanks for watching Fast Money. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.